Hello, I am Shireen Gourbani, and you are listening to a very special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle, where I am joined by Professor Jake Rue, who is joining us from BYU. Welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes. So you are of particular interest to me because you call yourself the most, do you say that you're the most optimistic Democrat in Utah?
I am.
Okay. But not just on vibes. You have some data to back this up.
Yes, ma'am.
So tell me a little bit about your background. You don't have to tell me about your optimism just yet. We'll get to that. But you are a professor at BYU. What is your area of expertise? What's your area of study?
Sure. Yeah, I'm a professor in the Department of Sociology. I've been here since 2012 at BYU here in Provo, Utah. And my area of expertise is around segregation and housing, home ownership, also issues about immigration, which we can talk more about later.
Yeah, like I would love to.
Local immigration enforcement. I've done a little bit more on race and religion lately as well.
Yeah.
We conducted a recent study as well that we can talk about. So those are some of my areas.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how did you develop an interest in this? Did you grow up in a home that was curious about the world around us? I mean, I always think about, you know, sociology feels like that study of the very tangible ways that our policy creates and practices create the world that we exist in and live in. I'm sure you have a much more sophisticated definition. But how did you get interested in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Both inside and outside the home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was raised by two parents who both went to graduate school. They didn't study sociology. My mom is an American historian.
Oh, interesting.
She's done a great book on the history of the American vacation.
Yeah.
Called Are We There Yet?
Yeah.
Which has a lot of intersection with sociology, among other things. And she's studying motels and travel and tourism right now.
How interesting.
My father, he passed away 10 years ago. May he rest in peace.
Oh, sorry.
Was a very unique person.
Yeah.
It's really hard to put into words, but he was somebody who studied art history and then went into business and was incredibly successful.
Yeah.
An incredible communicator and educator, my mom being a professor as well. So they definitely encouraged critical thinking.
Yeah.
But being in graduate school, they stayed in Chicago at the University of Chicago where they both studied.
Yeah.
So we were in grad school back to back in the 1980s. So growing up in lower income housing, living in Section 8 housing, going to public schools in Chicago, going to Little League, very integrated.
Yeah.
Even my church life being incredibly racially integrated for somebody who's LDS or Mormon.
Yeah.
Very unusual. But being there so long was an incredible experience. Being in one of probably three integrated neighborhoods out of 77 in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which has definitely been one of the nation's most segregated cities.
Yeah.
And so after I left there, that's what made me curious because I thought, wow, not everybody lives the way that I did.
Yeah.
And even just the built environment, being able to walk everywhere, going to a place where you had to drive everywhere.
Yep.
There are so many things that we take for granted, like you said, that sociology teaches us that are wired into the system.
Yeah, to get curious about.
Yep, to get curious about.
Yeah.
So leaving that place made me really curious. I left when I was about almost 16 years old.
Yeah.
And lived in Minnesota for 2 years just to get a little bit more brutal weather.
Just to get nice and cold.
Yeah. And that's what kind of set me on this path. I would not be a sociologist. I would not be studying race, segregation, other issues without that experience.
Yeah.
There's no way.
So it's really interesting. We have some religious diversity on this show. Natalie and John are both LDS. I am not. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how your faith has, I mean, it sounds like you had a very unique experience with your faith growing up, just in terms of who you prayed with, right? The mm-hmm. environment that you went to. In what ways has your faith shaped your inquiry, your study?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I won't be able to fully answer that.
That's okay.
But yeah, worshiping with people of different races and even different nationalities in Chicago and in a congregation that today is still incredibly integrated to this day. And it's multiple congregations. It's grown. Was something that affected me deeply.
Yeah.
Particularly my very first leader when I was a little toddler was a black woman named Kathy Stokes.
Yeah.
And she lives here in Salt Lake now.
Oh, wow.
And she's a very famous black LDS or Mormon pioneer. And I had so many leaders that were African-American, that were black American, and seeing them in positions of authority and positions of power and sharing things that are so sacred when it comes to the civil rights movement, the great black migration, their history of fleeing lynching and their families. It has an incredible impression on you as a little white boy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think I think we know why it's so important that women and people of color have somebody in authority to look up to and see themselves that they can become. But I think my life is a testament to why it's important for white guys to see people like that.
Yeah.
Because it teaches them that there's no way that any race or gender is, you know, inferior to somebody else.
Yeah.
Because growing up like that, these people were my teachers, my coaches, my mentors, and it had an incredible impression on me. And not just them directly, but also being with other white people who trusted equally and said, we're going to share leadership, we're going to share power.
Yeah.
We're going to have in the 1980s, right, a Mormon congregation that is 45% black and 45% white,
yeah,
as well as the leadership to make it reflect it. And so that was incredibly unique, incredibly different. And part of it was because my father joined the church in California as a teenager, and nobody in his family ever joined. And he did not have any of the same cultural constraints or baggage or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he was a much more free thinker. He would give a talk every year comparing Joseph Smith and Martin Luther King.
How interesting.
And that's just one of many other things.
So it's interesting because I have, not being raised here, I was raised in North Dakota, not really being exposed to the kind of home faith for me was Catholics. I went to a Catholic high school, but like I was raised by a Muslim and a Lutheran, but really they were like, you know, a feminist and an alcoholic. But like the true like thing that I found so interesting moving here, running for office, running for federal office. I ran for Congress in 2018. So 2018, 2017, knocking on doors across the state, I was so moved by and just because of the demographics, the numbers, I had to knock on a lot of Republican doors. And the amount of Republican people that I clocked, you know, I mean, we'll say, you know, stereotype, of course, like kind of older, especially white men who I thought was a good, there was a good chance I was talking to a Mormon, you know, individual. The amount of pain that they expressed over what they were seeing in terms of the Trump administration's immigration policy was something that gave me a lot of peace. The frustration that I have around what's happening in this country, the rhetoric around immigrants, was something that felt to me very viscerally like it bothered members of the LDS faith deeply, like really offended them deeply. And it was something that really kind of restored my faith in humanity. I don't often hear the story about how our own internal national struggles and reckoning around race has impacted people's faith journey. So thanks for sharing that
a little bit. You're quite welcome.
I think that's an interesting turn. So you have been studying the way that I think numbers are moving in this state. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk to the political side of it, but is there anything else kind of from the topics that you mentioned that you're looking at right now that you think are interesting or could be interesting to our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as a sociologist, somebody who didn't grow up in Utah, even though I have seven generations of people either being born or raised here, it's incredibly intriguing. And a lot of social scientists from MIT to UC San Diego and everywhere in between have studied Utah, have written books about it, and said, what is going on in a state like this? What makes it so different?
Yeah.
Being a red state that's reliably Republican and will be for a while. We can talk about that later.
Yeah.
But also one that is pretty much tied for second in terms of policies being the most immigrant-friendly state after California. And that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Being a place that has high social trust, high rates of volunteering, civic participation. There are a lot of strengths that Utah could build off of. There are a lot of things right now that are in jeopardy as well that we can talk about. But it's a remarkable thing that as a sociologist, you say, wow, there must be something about the way that society is set up here that leads to a different outcome. And it's not just the aggregation or like adding up the return missionary effect. It's not just that people went on a mission, so they're more sympathetic. That's been documented. I have colleagues that that's true. That's a thing.
Yeah.
But it's more than that, right? It's institutions like the church, other churches too, like the Catholic Church, so many other faiths. You know, the International Rescue Committee, Red Cross. I mean, there's so many organizations, right, that have said, we welcome the refugee. We welcome the stranger. And not only do we welcome them, we're going to have this policy and that policy. They're going to be able to get driver's license and in-state tuition, right?
Yeah.
And refugees can get Medicaid and, you know, so on and so forth. That is something that has made Utah a magnet. And also, of course, because of its economy, its youthful age, right, the Silicon Slopes, you know, being a ski town.
Yeah.
And just like many other states, the capital, Salt Lake, is a mecca for those in the LGBTQ plus community, right? That's something very common you see in Austin, Texas, Salt Lake. Yeah. You know, I mean, it tends to be one city where they gravitate as well,
yeah.
and that contributes to the vibrancy. And we have organizations like Equality Utah,
yeah.
where Troy has just departed and is no longer leading it. But he and others, so many people at Equality Utah, have said, we are invested in this place.
Yeah.
We will bargain in good faith, and we will help create policies that will endure,
yeah.
right? No matter what these Supreme Court decisions have been. And that's a really remarkable thing about Utah that I think gets at the tension in your question of why people are so concerned, whether they're Republican or Democratic, or you know how a lot of people don't want to be either.
Yeah.
They say they're independent, right?
Yep.
Unaffiliated or independent. People get concerned that the weight of our polarization is not really the right word, right? Because it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
Demonization of people.
Dehumanization.
And dehumanization,
yeah.
particularly of our immigrant brothers and sisters. They worry that is threatening
yeah.
the Utah way. And it absolutely is.
I think it is, too.
We've seen it in the legislature. We've seen bad bills been passed. And we've also seen, I think, thankfully, this session, bad bills get beaten back
yeah.
and not get passed.
Yeah.
And that's a testament to people coming together across these divides. Sorry, that was
answer. It's a good answer, but it really sets us up to talk about
yep.
what is happening and changing in politics. So we are going to take a quick break and we're going to come right back. I'm Shireen Gourbani. I'm joined by Professor Jake Rue, and we will be right back. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Hello again, Shireen Gourbani, and this is a special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle where we are diving into a changing Utah with Professor Jake Rue. Jake, tell us a little bit about what is changing politically or by political alignment in this state.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last 20 years, from 2004 to 2024, Utah at the presidential level has swung blue more than any other state.
Okay.
Which means it's moved to the left 24 points, yeah. which is way more than the runners-up like Maryland and Colorado.
Yeah.
So that George Bush, for example, when he ran against John Kerry, and you and I are old enough to remember
yes.
that, won by, you know, 24 points more than Trump did over Harris.
Yeah.
And Harris did better than any Democrat since LBJ won Utah in 1964.
Wow.
Which is incredible, right?
And do you think, I know it's tough, but I know you dive into the data on this. How much of that is driven, do you think, by changing ideas? Or how much do we think a lot of it's driven by changing people?
Yeah, absolutely. Most of it is a change in people's ideas and vote choice since 2012. Big drop off, right? Since Romney ran and the Bush years. But also in the background, there's always change, right? As a demographer and a sociologist, every 4 years, that's 4 years of new voters entering, 4 years of people passing away,
yeah.
moving out, retiring to other destinations.
Yeah.
So there are both things happening.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, in the medium term of the last dozen years, it's mostly a story about people rejecting extremism
yeah.
and saying, I'm a Republican, but that's too far for me.
Yeah.
With Trump and MAGA and that movement. And I know that recent, you know, YouGov, I think, study came out saying, you know, a little bit more than half of Republicans consider themselves a MAGA Republican, but it's really only 18% of all voters, okay? Because a lot of people that were Republican, and I know a lot of them
yeah.
in Utah County, are no longer registered, right? and no longer consider themselves that, right?
It's a big change.
It's been a big change.
If I'm not mistaken, I've heard you talk particularly about the changes in Utah County. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, Utah County has swung blue even more, so 36 points,
yeah.
right? Which is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, the only other place that swung blue as much as the Wasatch Front is Atlanta, Georgia, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a remarkable story. And Utah County, along with Davis County, Cache County, just kept swinging blue even this last election
yeah.
when the whole country swung right. So there are like 200 counties that have a lot of people in them that are really populous, and only 3% swung blue, and Utah County
is one of them,
part of that 3%.
Now, this is really interesting to me for a number of reasons. Utah County, I believe you'll probably be able to correct me. Is it still growing faster than Salt Lake County?
Yes.
Is it the fastest or is it Washington?
It's not the fastest, but it's adding the most people because it's so big.
Because it's so big.
Yep.
And I'm interested, too, in how, and I mean this with love because I know it's hard to do political fundraising, but I would say it's really been a place that has, given how quickly the population is growing, how young the population of Utah County is, it's been a place that's been underinvested in terms of organizing dollars or infrastructure from the party. So to have it go that far without a large scale investment, and to be clear, I don't feel like Republicans are really pumping a lot of money into organizing either. So it's just a place where we have an underinvestment, I think, for the opportunity that exists. It's so interesting that it moved that far with people kind of just coming to a lot of conclusions on their own. We've had great candidates who'd get out and try to run, but a lot of that has kind of just happened. Is that fair?
Yeah, and that's what makes it fascinating as a sociologist, right?
Yeah.
Because it's been more sociological than it has been political or campaign.
Yeah.
Right? It's happened because people talk to other people and say, I'm not going to go this far. I'm not going to go into this extremism, what's happening in our country.
Yeah.
And they've had three elections in a row at the presidential level to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And increasingly, they reject, right, MAGA. And so this is something, you know, after Trump leaves the scene and passes away of natural causes, of course, that this is going to be interesting to see what happens in the future.
Yeah.
Increasingly, we're seeing, we talked about the legislature earlier, that connection between extremism really overtaking state level politics as well across the country. And I think Utah was the last state where the Republican Party was overtaken by MAGA. It took the longest to happen.
Yeah.
But in 2024, when Governor Cox endorsed Trump, right? And he was obviously very conflicted about it. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
That was the end of an 8-year process.
Yeah.
Okay. But we've seen, especially just to give you one stat, Utah has the highest number of people protesting against ICE and No Kings of any red state in America.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean total numbers.
Yeah.
And that's remarkable because there's a lot of red states that have a lot more people.
Yeah. Right.
And so there are a lot of people, and I've been to those, you know, demonstrations, peaceful protests, you know, most of the people there are just run-of-the-mill, middle-of-the-road people.
Yeah, just
tired of it. Not activists.
Yeah.
Not outwardly saying they're Democrats. Most of them independent. I've met a lot of Republicans as well.
Yeah.
A lot of business owners. They know that this is bad for Utah.
Yeah.
To be deporting people, deporting dreamers, deporting even BYU graduate students have been caught up into this.
Yeah.
Lots and lots. University of Utah had a student, right, who couldn't go to his graduation.
Yeah.
To miss that milestone in his life after all that hard work. People know this is wrong.
Yeah.
But the problem is they don't make that connection between policy and people.
Yeah.
Right. When they vote. But now that connection is being really made clear.
Yeah.
And I want to just say one more thing about this immigrant thing. If you look at Minnesota, which in many ways is like a sister state, which has very high levels of immigrant welcoming. Their churches there, the Lutherans and others, really welcome immigrants and refugees like we do, volunteering. They really rose to the occasion,
yeah,
right, with the Operation Metro surge. And those surges didn't really happen all in immigrant neighborhoods,
right?
They happened more in neighborhoods that were voting against Trump. It was more of a political retribution.
Yes.
And they happened mostly in suburban areas because most people live in the suburbs, yeah, right? And people, they're just ordinary suburbanites, are making lunches for people, delivering food, taking kids to school, just loving your neighbor, right? And being a good neighbor.
Yeah.
So that really resonates.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great example. And it was a huge turning point in public opinion about ICE and other related issues. And I think we're seeing now with that issue, as well as the data centers, which is obviously not my area of expertise, but we're seeing a lot of issues galvanize people, unite them.
Yeah.
And saying we've got to make a change.
Yeah.
And part of what happens every 4 years with our elections is people just kind of throw the people out. They were upset about inflation. We're upset about that without really understanding what's going on. Right.
Yeah.
What. Right.
Building long term.
How does the system work?
Right? Yeah. Building long term policy that turns into this kind of violence in our streets or the opposite.
Yeah. And Utah is a positive case of long term policy. Right. We've been friendly to immigrants, been able to get driver's license and state tuition for like 20 years plus. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what's made it such a great place for immigrants to raise their kids. And now at BYU, for example, we have over 3,000 Latino and Hispanic students, right? Most of them children or grandchildren of immigrants, right?
Yeah.
Achieving the American dream.
Yeah, yeah. And I do think it's important. I sometimes want to overemphasize why it is so important that you're able to get a driver's license, why you're able to, like, all of those things provide a higher level of safety, security for everyone involved when we can have people living openly, that we can have people living on the books as opposed to living in the shadows where crime occurs. You can't report it. You know, like all of these,
exactly.
There are all of these kind of spillover effects from really good and humanely focused immigration policy. I want to add to that. I noticed that a list came out of really like the best places to live, and Minnesota is top of the list in terms of just like state well-being, mm-hmm. Which is funny because it is so cold, especially in some places. I went to college there, and I was surprised to see the Dakotas are still pretty high on the list. But for other red states, it was interesting to see how many of them are on the lowest 10. If you know, really your quality of life in a red state is more likely to be poor. But Utah joins Minnesota. It's not as high. I think it's like in the bottom five. Might be number nine. But in those kinds of numbers, I think it is a really interesting story about who we have been. And you mentioned you felt like that is potentially at risk a little bit. What do you think that's because of the change in our legislature, or what are the things that you're sort of worried about as you're looking towards the horizon for Utah when it comes to either our political movement or our leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's three words, right? The legislature is not representative of the people. It is overwhelmingly white men who are LDS. The population is about 50% LDS, for example. The Democratic Party, actually, their representatives do reflect the people. which is very interesting, right? They're not accountable, right?
The legislature
has not been accountable. It's been held accountable with respect to gerrymandering the maps, which has very strong public support.
Or whittling away at workers' rights.
Yep. Workers' rights. I mean, you can just pick any issue. And that is what a sociologist would say, right? When you have a supermajority, there's no accountability, the veto power doesn't matter, right? You will get outcomes like this because of the structure of the way it's set up, the composition. Right. Yeah. It's not necessarily the individual personalities or dispositions of the people. Right. It's because there's no check. Right. Yeah. Like James Madison said. Right. There's no checks and balances.
Yeah.
Right. Right now in Utah. And so what we want and what many people are working towards across different parties, I'm working with people that are Republican, independents and Democrats, is accountability, moderation, right? Compromise, and getting back to the Utah way.
Yes, I would love it. I sometimes feel like the Utah way has become something that I say in jest around the level of hypocrisy that I'm seeing these days. And I'm sad about that because it did mean something.
Yeah.
And it has the potential to mean something again. So we just have a few minutes left. Is there any special tidbit or a thing that you would love our listeners to know about a changing Utah?
Yeah, changing Utah. Whoa, that's a great question. I would say I've seen it in my students. I've been teaching for 12 years. I've seen people come in with a higher level of awareness and knowledge. I think we've been really blessed by a diversifying population of people of different backgrounds, different states, different countries. It's a really interesting journey to be an educator, to be in the classroom, and then to see the students actually make a difference in Utah.
Yeah,
I've seen so many. Many have now run for office and be elected. I've been teaching that long. I feel kind of old.
That's amazing.
But I've always been someone who's been popular and even beloved by my students because you lay things out, you show the data, you do things in a way that you use objective methods, but you're not morally neutral because neutral does not equal objective, right? You do the best methods. You have a moral stance, right? We are against racism, right? We are for welcoming the stranger, for example.
Yeah.
But you let that person decide and make the connections on their own.
Yeah.
And when they do that, they're much more empowered. And then you say, I want you to figure out how you're going to contribute to the community.
Yeah.
And so many people have done that. I have seen students at press conferences recently just out there helping to stop these horrible things that are happening. Right. And all I can do is smile and just say someone was empowered. Somebody used their agency to connect, to build community and to make Utah a better place.
Yeah. And I think there's so much of that tied into the story we started with, which is if you have the luxury and privilege of growing up in a home that genuinely instills a desire for free thinking and provides you with access to a high quality education.
Mm-hmm.
You really can change the world. I really believe that.
Yes, together we can. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But it takes resources. It takes that investment. And it takes that orientation and that idea of, right, I'm the most optimistic Democrat, but also being the most hopeful person, right?
Yeah.
And saying, even when things are hard, right, I'm hopeful that we will get past this
yes.
to a better tomorrow.
Oh my goodness. Well, Jake, thank you so much for joining. I'm Shireen Gourvani, your regular co-host, and I'm joined by Professor Jake Rue, who is down at BYU instilling free thinking and presenting the data to students, and I'm grateful for that work and also all you've done to track the changes across Utah. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Our program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you so much for listening. Hey, listeners, this episode will be available shortly at upr.org and wherever you get your podcasts.